Like, do you plan your bills, right? You know, you get paid, you know, biweekly. Do you plan your bills around the first and 15th of the month, right? To understand how that money goes. So for me, it's more about how well you understand and how well you practice budgeting, your own income, and how you allocate where you spend your money.
Hey everyone, this is Matt Wagstaff, and welcome to the Live Long and Prosper podcast, where I discuss a number of topics related to living a life of balance, abundance, and happiness. Much of what I share on this podcast is related to personal development, business, and financial literacy. I hope that this podcast is adding a tremendous amount of value to you, your loved ones, the community at large, and I hope that you will share this podcast with as many people as you know that will add value to their lives. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Thank you very much, Rob, for being part of the podcast experience, Live Long and Prosper podcast. Super excited to have our conversation today about financial literacy. You know, this is Financial Literacy Month, and I'm interested in hearing your perspective on the topic. But before we dive into the meat of the conversation today, for anyone who does not know who Robert De Leon is, can you just please let them know a little bit about who you are?
That's a really good question, man. Thank you for having me. And thank everyone who's joining to share some space with us today. I appreciate that. Who am I? I'm originally from New York City, born and raised, moved to Rochester, long story short. My current wife now is from Rochester. Loved it. Love it here now. I'm an advisor with the University of Rochester, a graduating MBA candidate for Simon School of Business in May. But the title that I'm most proud of, and I think that I want anyone to know me as, is father. I'm a recent dad. My little guy was born November 28th, so he's a little over four months old now. And that is probably the most joyous thing I've ever done in my life. So I'm really happy about that.
Absolutely. The blessings of fatherhood. Congratulations again on that and that journey. Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And so you have a very unique experience of beginning fatherhood during a pandemic. Imagine that, right?
It has been fun. Yes. It has been fun, to say the least.
You know, while also working on your MBA at one of the best schools, you know, that you can think of in terms of the U of R and their business program. Awesome. I mean, not quite like, you know, Canisius or University of Buffalo, but, you know, it's a pretty decent school.
No. I mean, it's highly ranked. I mean, just like yours, it's highly ranked.
Highly ranked. Yes, absolutely. But, you know, talk to me a little bit about, or just share with the folks, just in life, like, how have you been able to sort of manage through this pandemic and the lockdowns and the shutdowns and all these things?
Yeah, it's been a roller coaster ride, to be honest. Like many, my wife and I have lost a significant amount of people in our lives due to COVID. So when it first came around, you know, it's the initial shock and the worry, what's going to happen? How is this going to impact our lives? On top of my wife, you know, just fairly recently in that time period, finding out that we were expecting our first son, our first child. So, you know, that, and it, you know, it applies perfectly to financial literacy. You know, you're having a baby, the pandemic hits, you don't know about work security, you don't know about the country itself. So a lot of worry comes into play. And I think for me, what's helped us manage through COVID is having really strong communication with your partner. And I think when you think about that, being able to sit down and talk about, like, you know, what does this look like moving forward? What are some things, like, what are your worries? What are my worries? And then sitting down to plan things through, right? So, initially you have that panic that sits in, but what helped us is we went back to our finances. I keep an Excel sheet of, you know, what we bring in and what we pay out, right? And looking at that helps bring a little bit of reassurance, like, okay, we're okay. And if we need to make some cuts here and there to increase our cushion, our budget, right, for the emergency fund, so that, you know, God forbid, if something does happen, we can say, okay, we have at least X amount of months worth of, you know, bills, and it isn't as stressful. It's also been a bit of a blessing because I've been able to be present with my wife throughout the whole pregnancy, but then also the birth and the baby and being home with the baby. So that's been a bit of a blessing. But one thing that ties into this too, is which is pretty interesting, is this has made me focus more in my finances and cutting the fat. Right, you know, prior to COVID, you know, you had some things that you know, some extra subscriptions to provide to services and online things that you're like, you know, it's what's a few bucks, and you never really pay attention to that. And when COVID hit, it forced me to say, okay, where are the things that we don't necessarily need anymore that we can afford to just cut back on a little bit? And not necessarily like we're going to do without something, but more of like, that's not a necessity, so that we can prepare for other things, right? And I think what it also did was help us plan out what things we want, like what projects or what we wanted to buy more effectively. So Dave Ramsey has the envelope system. And I, for a really long time, when I first started learning about about financial literacy, I learned this from my uncle, is the envelope. He had paper envelopes. So if you wanted to do something, put a paper envelope and say, every week I'm going to put this money aside, right? So we kind of created this really interesting system of an envelope system using an app. And I think now with technology, it makes it so much easier to organize your funds and organize where things are going. We use an app called Digit, and that kind of like allocates money for you in particular envelopes and funds. So that's the pandemic has forced us to look at our finances a little more closely and then plan a little more, more specifically as to where things are going, where the dollar is going, where it shouldn't be going, and then how to invest that money to grow, to make it grow over time.
Excellent. I mean, that's a pretty awesome plan and like process you guys have right there. Like, that's like seriously legit, like just went all in on planning and making sure that things are right. That's pretty cool, man. Like, a lot of folks were just kind of scrambling, trying to figure it out. You guys and say, okay, all right, time to go laser focus. What do we need to do? How do we get there?
Because of experiences. Yeah, I think because of experiences, right? I think it takes you to understand, like, it takes difficult times to understand how to approach challenging and changing times, right? You know, you can choose how you want to respond to certain things around you. And for us, you know, initially, like, everyone around us was panicking and money, and, you know, I have family who lost their jobs and lost work because of the pandemic. So we saw that happening. We said, okay, how can we best prepare for the worst case scenario? Because everyone was preparing with toilet paper and food and rice and things are going missing. I went back and I said, okay, we got to make sure that we have enough to sustain ourselves in case the worst situation happens. And I think that helped us stay grounded rather than really worry about what things were going on and lose track of our money. Because I think when you panic and you don't know where your money's going, you just continue to throw money in places, you know, without saving it specifically.
Yes. So having that line of sight, being able to see and track where the money's going. Okay, so I think that's an excellent transition into, you know, the crux of the conversation around financial literacy. And so in my book, Live Long and Prosper, we talk a little bit. I try to break down what I think financial literacy, the definition of financial literacy, and try to make it easy and simple. I'm super curious about like how you and others define financial literacy, and like in the most simplistic terms, like when you think of somebody being financially literate, like what do you think about?
For me, for someone, and I think it can take many different directions, right? I think as a if you're speaking to someone with like a finance background, or you're speaking with someone who has an MBA or has background in business, they'll tell you about, you know, accounting and things like that. But I think for the common person, everyday person, I think for me, when I speak to about financial literacy, it's speaking specifically to how well you know your own personal method of managing your money, right? I think I'd be surprised how many people I speak to that are like, yeah, I know how much I make, and, you know, I don't really keep track of the bills, but, you know, everything else is kind of like whatever I need it, right? And I think understanding how you manage your money is important. Understanding your budgeting. So how do you budget? Because for me, if someone doesn't necessarily budget, they don't plan, right? And then the saving component, right? Because when I think about financial literacy as a whole, as individuals, it's how well you know your money, how well you know where your money's going, right? How do you budget to buy things? So you just say, you know what, next week I get paid, I'm gonna use that money to buy what I want to buy, right? And then you got 20 bucks for the week and you don't know what you're eating, right? Or like, do you plan your bills, right? You know, you get paid, you know, bi-weekly. Do you plan your bills around the first and 15th of the month, right? To understand how that money goes. So for me, it's more about how well you understand and how well you practice budgeting your own income and how you allocate where you spend your money.
Yeah. You mentioned a good point around, so like that, compulsive spending. And so with that being the case, I'm curious about where do you think discipline plays a role in somebody's financial literacy? Like, if can someone be compulsive and be financially literate?
I would say no, because in the sense that you could do this is if you would still have to be financially literate to have a separate fund for play money, right? If you have a fund for like, you know what, this is my play money, every paycheck, you know, 10, 15, 20, whatever you can allocate goes into that. And then that's my, like, you know, my, oh, I saw that shirt and I kind of want it. And, but as long as you don't break away from that budget, then I guess that is still financially literate, but it would take you to budget and put that money aside. So I would say no. For someone starting in the process of who is like a compulsive spender, and someone who, and this is something I've worked with a friend of mine on, they didn't understand the need for saving or budgeting, right? They're just like, it's my money, I want to live, I want to spend it, right? So I thought that something that worked for me when I was starting in this journey of financial literacy was give it 72 hours, right? If you want to really buy something, give it 72 hours, right? And it's the 72-hour rule, where if you, in 72 hours, if you still want to buy it, then you know it's important to you, right? Because the majority of things, the impulse, you'll forget about it in 2-3 days, right? You're like, oh man, that
3 you know, days.
I mean, 3 days? You can 2 days, 3 days. But for me, it was I needed to go, like, for this person and for myself. It was like I really need to set and hold myself accountable, right? You know, there are things like new sneakers that come out, you know, when I was younger, new games, new systems, and, you know, random things, right? New phone, new watch. And if I wanted it after that amount of time, then I said, okay, let's budget for it. Let's create an envelope for it, right? But if after 3 days, I didn't even remember it, you'll forget about it. Like, you just permanently forget about it until later down the road. You're like, you know what? I really did want that. Whatever happened. And then you'll realize it wasn't that important. It wasn't a necessity. Because the things you really want, you'll budget for.
Yeah, that's huge. That's huge. The 72-hour rule, everybody. Write that down. 72-hour rule. Maintain discipline. Stay the course. Yes. I remember my wife and I, we just got some appliances. And so, you know, it's easy to get into these stores. And these sales folks are phenomenal. Like, they're all over you, and they really know what to say and how to finance and all these things. It's like, all right, my rule is like, I got to sleep on it. Like, anything over a certain dollar amount, like, I have to just sleep on it. Like, I can't pull the trigger immediately. That being said, for those who know me, I have an affinity to sneakers, and I can't help myself when it comes time to pull the trigger on some sneakers. That being said, I also have my own money that we're able to have for that. So that makes it easy.
Right. to get your sneaker game.
Yes.
And
yes,
I think
yes,
for yes. me, I have a little hack for you. You mentioned appliances, right? And I think something that really stands out to me is I have a personal rule around shopping for furniture and appliances. I always go on a Friday. I always go on a Friday.
Okay. Tell me more.
Because I don't buy on a Friday. You don't buy the first time you show up at the store because you're looking around. And even if you're impulsive to want to buy it, you say, I'll touch base on Monday. If by Monday you still want it, then you know you really wanted it, right? So for me, I always, that's kind of like the 72-hour rule, but I kind of force myself a little bit, because typically some of these places are closed on Sundays, or the sales rep that's really pushing you to buy it is not going to be there one of those 2 days, right? So it gives you that cushion to say, you know what? You know, I appreciate your time. This is something we're really interested in, but we're going to talk about it over the weekend, and we'll come back to you on Monday. So for me, like, that's one way I've kind of like worked around. It's almost like implementing your own life hacks, right? So I think you have so much information out there that you get decision paralysis, you get information overload. And the secret for me is, how do you take information that's available and make it yours, make it personal? Mm-hmm. And that's when, you know, financial literacy really becomes effective, because it isn't something Absolutely. That you're doing that's outside of what you're accustomed to, but it's something like, oh, yeah, I did this, this fits perfectly into the way I do things this way, right?
Yeah. So when you talk about the information and being able to apply that information, in terms of financial literacy and somebody being financially literate, you know, how, or let's say, what words or what terminology do you feel like help you make good financial decisions? Like, what are you looking for when you're trying to make a financial decision? And what sort of knowledge and terminology do you think is important for everyone to be at least have a surface level knowledge about in order to be financially literate?
Yes, I think it's really important to understand how money flows in and out your home or your bank account, right? And by that, I mean, when you know, if you have an X amount of money in your account, is that money accounted for, mm-hmm. right? Because you might have, you know, X amount of money in your account, but you're not taking into account the fact that in 2 days, your mortgage is coming out. And in another day, your cell phone is coming out, right? So you really don't have that amount of money. You have it there readily available for right now, but so it's being aware of your own. So awareness is one of those things, right? Awareness of where your money is. For me, I know where my money is at all times. It is not something that I check, you know, every minute, every day, but I make it a habit in the mornings when I wake up to look at my accounts, see what's happening so that I can understand my own financial situation any given day. So that, you know, because emergencies happen, and instead of causing more stress by having to go back and say, man, do I have that money here? What do I do with that? I can easily say if something comes up, okay, cool, it's going to come out of that account because that's there and that's building X, Y, and Z, right? The second one is grow your money. So growth, so understanding how to help your money grow. So where to put it, understanding, you know, if you're going to do 401ks, if you're going to do investments, if you're going to do crypto, if there's so many things out there and social media.
Dogecoin to the moon.
Oh man, that's the meme coin, right? I was just talking to a buddy of mine that, I was telling him that there is no limit. There's no cap on Dogecoin, unlike Bitcoin and some of these. So what's going to happen? Like that, when you go liquidate, when some of these guys who have millions of dollars, they go liquidate, I'm not going to want to buy that coin off of you at market price. You're going to have to sell it cheaper for me to buy it off of you.
Oh my God. We don't need to go into Doge right now. I'm sorry.
Right. So there's a lot of, no, you're good. So there's a lot of things that go on. So for me, it's debt management, going back to your original question. So awareness of your money, awareness of your debt. So where your money's going, right? And your investment strategies. Because when I think about awareness of your accounts, that's awareness of your emergency funds, awareness of what you're budgeting for, right? And then when I think about debt, it's understanding that, yeah, sure, you can. I've seen situations when I worked in more financial roles, I've seen situations where someone's making a ridiculous amount of money. I mean, making close to six figures, but at the end of every week, they had maybe 20, 25 bucks to their name to buy food and things that they needed, right? So understanding that, yeah, you can make what you bring in. That's why understanding like your debt situation is really important, because sure, you can make six figures, but what are you paying out, right? So is your pump, is your faucet all on, right? Because if it is, your hot water tank is gonna run low on hot water, right? You can't take out more than you put in, right? So those are the main words I would think about, right? Would be investments, understanding your debt, and awareness of your accounts and what's, you know, awareness of where your money is. Yeah. Sorry, that was a long, really long answer.
No, man, that was great. That was great. I mean, there's levels and layers within what you just shared there. So we're talking about like the awareness of where the money is going. So that budget piece. So the term budget is a term that everyone probably should be aware of. Like, why is that valuable? What is it? And also, and how do you actually use it in your life? Debt is another term that everyone needs to sort of get comfortable in understanding, like good debt, bad debt, interest, you know, all these things, risk, et cetera. And then investment is another term. And so investment has a whole, you know, different levels and layers that go into the investment world. And there's a lot of terminology that lives within each of those buckets. And so
100%. You know,
would you consider there to be levels of financial literacy? And if so, like, what would you consider to be maybe like two or three levels?
That's a really good question, Matt. And I think for me, when I think about this, right, I wanna make one recommendation, if I may, on something that I mentioned right before this. And that's, financial literacy, when I've mentioned it around family, because I think for me growing up, financial literacy wasn't something that was spoken about publicly, right? For me, I'm Dominican. I was, you know, raised in the Bronx, and a lot of your finances are private. So what happens in the house stays in the house. Personal finances is personal finances, right? You don't need to know where the money is. You just got to know that we're good, right? And when I think about that and the conversations I had as an adult, I feel like sometimes there's this this stereotype around financial literacy that's almost like it's scary, right? The fear of not making enough and where you know not you don't want to never you really don't want to know where your money's going. You just know that you're good, you're alive, eating, you got a roof over your head, right? But for me, I've kind of like I've made it almost into I don't want to say gamified, but I've found a way to make this more objective oriented, right? So for instance, you mentioned debt, right? And you know, you have like your debt to income ratio, right? So what do you bring in respect to what goes out? I've developed a way to say, okay, how can I decrease that? Right? How do I find ways to decrease my debt so I can have more money to invest? Right. And to answer your question about the levels, I think the base level would be your own personal finances. So your own financial literacy of your household and yourself and your family, right? Starting there, understanding, like we talked about, your budgets, right? Whatever that may look like, right? That may look like, you know, separate accounts. You may have an account just for bills, and then you do what you want based on what you want to budget afterwards, right? So I think the first level would be your own personal finances with you, your partner, and your household, right? Understanding the flow of money, the debt, the budgeting, investment, right? Then the next level would be, the last part of that would be investment. So, okay, we're good with how we manage our money in the house, right? So now we have this bucket of money, this pool of money that we want to actually make grow, right? And it may take some exchanges. I don't like using the word sacrifice when it comes to growth and when it comes to generational wealth. So how do I take that and invest in? I think that's the next level is, all right, 401ks, Roths, right? All these different areas, right, that you may want to invest, right? And I think that part is where you talk about, you know, when we retire, what would that look like? So future planning is the next level of that, of financial literacy. And then the last one I would think about is actually playing around with the market, right? So that's like more involved with, you know, trading and, oh, I like this company, or I really stand by this product that I want to support it, or I hear really good things. And I think that third part is a little more challenging, but once you start the second component of, you know, future planning, you're kind of forced to transition into also thinking about investments because you're doing research about what 401ks to put into, right? Whether you're doing a traditional or a Roth, right? Which one is right? Where are you going to put your money, right? So when you start doing that, you're like, oh, you come across platforms to learn a little more about what it is that you want to do. And then that naturally transitions you into, you know, understanding markets, right? And maybe less about funds like 401ks and Roth 401ks, and more into like maybe having your own, you know, TD Ameritrade, Robinhood, that type of stuff, of your own individual investment accounts. So that's where I see it. And I think every level builds upon the other, and you need to start, you need to have a strong first foundation with your own personal finances. Yeah. Because once you start getting to the third, your risk tolerance has to match what your assets look like, what your money looks like to support those risks, right? You don't want to say, I have 10K, you know, I can use, not realizing that 10K is also your emergency fund. So if you lose 2K in the market, you just lost $2,000 in emergency funds, right?
Yes, huge, huge. And that's where I was going there, because it sounds like, you know, as you move up your levels, the risk you take is higher because you're smarter. And so you feel like you can take higher risk. And so you get that base, that foundation level, like you said, know where the money is, be aware of what's going on, how's it flowing. Then you start putting your money to work at the second level. You learn a little bit more about long-term investments, the term investing, like what type of risk that means. And then you can start playing around, like having more fun and like not necessarily playing around, but you could take more risk because you're starting to learn more and you're exposed to different things as you move up that ladder. And so I definitely understand and get how those levels can play. Can come.
Can I add one more thing, Matt?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I think one thing that I realize as you're kind of like giving back at what I mentioned is there's a component that goes unspoken, and that's your confidence. Your confidence in the decisions you're making increases as you go up in levels, right? Yeah. Because once you understand your personal finances and your own personal financial literacy, then you're confident in saying, I can use this money without sacrificing the way I'm living now, or without sacrificing going to food or shelter and things like that, right? And throughout that process, the phrase I like to use is you make more informed decisions because you're more informed about your own, you're more informed about future planning, and then you're more informed about the market. So you're more comfortable and confident because of the information you're gaining.
100%, 100%. and there's another phrase I use more in the coaching space, but it applies here, is you're raising your bar. And a bar is acronym for your beliefs, your actions, and results. And so when you believe something to be true, you take action on it. And when you take action on it, there's a result that happens. And if it's favorable, your belief, AKA what you said, your confidence grows, and you take more action, you have better results, more belief, more action, more results. And so that cycle where you keep raising the bar is something huge. So I agree with you 100%. And then there's also that piece you talked about the taking that risk, but also the fact that you know where your money's going in that foundation. You can take that risk knowing that you have your security going there. And so a lot of times you probably experience this as well, where someone will come to you and ask you for the latest, you know, crypto advice that they should invest in, or what stocks should they invest in. And the first question I usually ask is, do you have an emergency fund? And so unless you have $1,000 in an emergency fund, crypto shouldn't even be in your lexicon at that moment. You shouldn't even be talking about cryptocurrency. In my mind,
right. I agree.
I'm not God. I don't know what's right or wrong, but I'm just, that's what I usually, my response is. And so, you know, when someone comes to you and talks to you about anything other than about stocks or things of that nature, you know, what goes through your mind with those individuals?
Yeah. So my first question is very similar to yours. Depending on who I'm speaking to, right? If they are someone that I've known for a little bit and I can be a little more honest, I would say, you know, when they say, hey, Rob, you know, I'm going to invest, I would usually, my first question is how much, right? And then they'll tell me the amount. And I would say, if you lost that all tomorrow, would you be okay?
Mm.
So I think having that realization, I think sometimes, you know, there's a hype around investing right now, right? We've seen the market volatility. It's been wild, right? You know, I've had a lot of ups. I've also had some downs, right? In both the crypto and, you know, the market. But one thing I think I tell them is, if you lost that money tomorrow, would you still be okay? And if they say yes, then I know that they've at least thought about the possibility. Because I think when you're working with the market, or you're working with investing, there's always the likelihood, right, of you losing a significant amount of your investment, right? And I think introducing that initial shock, if they haven't thought about it, because I've had people that will say, oh, no, I wouldn't. Like, is that possible? And I said, oh, yeah, I mean, there's no guarantee on the market, right? I mean, of course, you have companies that you know won't bottom out completely, right? If you put money in, you know, Tesla, Apple, and Amazon, you know they're not going to drop all the way down, but you will, you know, there are chances. I've seen Amazon drop, you know, $600-$700, right? And for some people, it's like, oh my gosh, right? Unless you're prepared, right? So I think when we talk about that, it's the initial question is, how much, and are you, and if you lost that tomorrow, would you be okay? And if it's yes, okay, then why do you want, like, what are you thinking about? What kind of returns you want, right? Because I think instead of using words like risk tolerance, I think sometimes that when you use, like, you know, fancier terms or jargon that isn't familiar to someone who doesn't work with, you know, the market very much, I like using just words like, you know, I use words like, okay, so what is it, like, what kind of return do you want, right? Because if you want a faster return, then your risk has to be a lot higher, right? So there's this kind of like teeter-totter where, if you want a higher return, then you know your risk has to also be higher, right? If you're talking about, hey, Rob, you know, I want to put this long term, then that's where the question comes into play. How much do you want to make and how fast do you want to make it, right? Mm-hmm. If they say, I want to make it fast, then my friend, you got to be willing to lose it fast.
Yes.
Right?
To the moon.
Right, to the moon, right? Chain link to the moon, right? So we think about this, right? And I've had a bunch of buddies say, Rob, what crypto? And I said, you have to be, in crypto specifically, there's no guarantee. The same way it goes up is the same speed it can drop, right? But if someone says, hey, Robert, I have some money that I want to start thinking about long-term, then I'll say, okay, what kind of returns? Are you talking about, like, you know, market returns, 10, 15%? Then maybe look at these type of safer investments, right? ETF funds, right? Or firms that have had, you know, long-term growth, right? But it, you know, it just depends on what they're looking to gain, right? If you want quick money, then I tell them, you got to be willing to lose it as fast as you get it.
Yeah.
But then also is, the next question is, how much time do you want to invest? Because if you want to make fast money, then you have to stay on top of the money, right? Because that money's going to go quick, and then it's also going to drop quick. So you got to catch it when it hits its peak and sell before it drops. Because if you don't catch it, then my friend, you just lost your opportunity. Right? So yeah. I think there's a dynamic of risk tolerance and also how much work you're willing to put in to the actual market. So that's kind of like the conversations that I have. And then for those that I say, you know, long-term, then we talk about, you know, where do you have a preference as to where it goes? Do you have like some favorite companies? What kind of research have you done? Right? Because if you haven't done any research, you just want to tell you where to put the money. I don't necessarily like that responsibility specifically, because then if you lose your money, you're going to come back to me and say, Rob, you told me to put it here and I lost all my money. Right. So I'd rather say, hey, these are some recommendations. Do some research before you put the money in.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. Yeah, I mean, you kind of like you really diving into it and making sure, like, listen, make sure you know what you're getting into before you jump into this. And so you mentioned a couple of phrases and terms. So we talk about literacy, knowing the words and the language is important. And so you talked about risk, you talked about tolerance, risk tolerance, like that word together means something in the financial space. You talked also about return. And so return in the financial sense could mean something totally different than in other aspects of life. You also mentioned ETF, you know, so you know, those sort of things are deeper level jargon that, you know, as you become more literate, more financially literate, you become more familiar and aware and comfortable using those terms. As you have grown, you know, as we wrap up a little bit here, as you've grown in your financial literacy, you know, talk to us a little bit or talk to me a little bit about some of your habits that you have maybe on a daily, weekly basis to keep you on top of the terminology and to help grow your financial literacy.
That's a good point. That's a good question. Thank you, Matt. I think for me, it's developing a routine. So the more you make this part of who you are and what you do, and the more you make it less of a task and more of a routine, the easier it's going to be, and the quicker you'll grow. So for me, I make it a habit, like I mentioned, in the mornings. Like I wake up in the mornings and I'll feed my son, you know, 6:30 in the morning, sometimes earlier. And in that time, I use platforms like Seeking Alpha. I use platforms like MarketWatch, right? Because I'm a student, I get the Wall Street Journal. So I'll try to like look through some of the main points of the morning so far. But I'll also look at our accounts. So I'll look at an investments account, right? So if I have my TD, I'll look at my TD for that morning. I'll look at what's been trending for that, you know, the time before that. I'll look at our checking accounts to make sure, because I also, something else that I think you haven't touched upon, that financial literacy kind of like negates or prepares you for, and that's fraud. Mm. Right? We've heard an increase in fraud and fraudulent accounts and hacks and things like that, that for me, being able to every morning, you know, wake up or even at night, right, before you go to bed, just make it a quick check through, you know, 10, 15 minutes, go through your accounts, make sure everything looks the way it's supposed to look. Because you just never know nowadays with fraud going on. And, you know, you want to make sure that you catch it as quick as possible if it is going on. So that's something else that I think for me, I look at the accounts in the morning. I think about when we have, like with, we even have like accounts for birthdays. So we have birthdays coming up for gifts. We're like, okay, who do we have to get gifts for that comes out of this envelope, quote unquote envelope? So I plan pretty frequently with my wife around what do you want to do next month? Do we have any big ticket items that we need to do? I use an app that tracks the bills. So that's something else I do in the morning. I'll look at making sure that all the bills are paid that need to be paid, right? If I haven't within that period of time. So to keep it short, I know there's a longer answer, but I look at my accounts. I look at the market in the morning. I look at my bills that need to be paid in case that any do need to be paid. And then I look at where the excess money is going and what can be done with that, right? So maybe looking at the envelopes that we have and say, okay, honey, we've met our goal for this. What does this look like? What we might want to do with spending this now, right? If we wanted to buy something or take a trip or do something of the sort, right? Renovations, right?
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I mean, that's good to have habits. Habits are that really dictate and guide us into our future. Our habits become our destiny. You know, what we do repeatedly becomes who we are. And so it's good 100%. To know, you know, that you have that routine, that habit going on there.
And one more thing I want to add is the people you keep around you is incredibly important, right? So something I don't know why I missed, but something that has increased my financial literacy literacy exponentially is kind of like these financial convert these groups that we have that Matt, I mean, you and I are a part of, is these membership groups that, not membership, but these groups that we talk about finances, we talk about what's going on in the market, we give some feedback, give recommendations, like some things that we found new. So creating cohorts of people that are like-minded, even if you create a cohort of people that aren't experts and just say, hey, we're going to try to do this. Accountability is going to be at the forefront of that group. So being able to say like, hey, you know, you see your buddy, you know, you're like, hey, Matt, I thought we were holding each other. Like, but I see you going out to do that, right? Or didn't you just get a pair of kicks last week? I thought you said you were going to hold off for a month. Yeah. Right? Why are you going over those new Jordans, right? Those Carolina Blues that are coming up,
man,
right?
Like, I can't help it, man. You know,
right? So you see, like, and I think having the respect and relationship with those around you, that if they do hold you accountable, it isn't like, yo, why are you calling me out, bro? Like, it isn't like, you know, it isn't an attack on you. It's more of, I want to see you do better, so I would hope you do the same thing for me. So keeping those around you, so aligning yourself with people that are like-minded, or even saying, you know what, grab a few friends that you really trust and say, hey guys, this is what I want to do. If, you know, financial literacy isn't something that you talk about with your cohort or friends, and say, hey, you guys want to buy into this? Like, we can talk about watching videos, maybe every, you know, few weeks, every week we talk about new market trends, or maybe we talk about what worked that last week, you know, or hey, I slipped and it was horrible, but I want to get back on, right? So I think having a group of people that want similar goals is incredibly helpful. So all that plus develop a strong connection with people that want you to grow and you want to grow. And I think, because I'm really big on generational wealth, and I think creating that amongst us and amongst your closest family and friends is incredibly important, right? Because I think for me, success doesn't mean anything unless it's shared amongst the people that you really care about.
100%, 100%. And the old saying of your network is your net worth, and you are the sum total of the five people you hang around, continues to resonate and to be true. This has been great. This has been great. I appreciate and value you being in my network and in my circle and in my circle. And so it's definitely been a blessing to get to know you more over the last year. And so
same here. Thank you very much.
To more conversations, and this is great. The 72-hour rule, I got that written down too. I got that Friday rule. I'm loving that. I love that.
So let me a quick story before we end. That 72-hour rule got me to the when I was going for a new vehicle for right before the pandemic. We were in the market for a new vehicle. And funny enough, I used the Friday 72-hour rule, and we went looking for cars. We went to a dealership and really liked the vehicle that we had. And we were like, all right, I'm going to come back on Monday, right? Well, I'll give you a call on Monday. And the guy said, why don't you take it home with you and bring it back on Monday? No charge. So the dealer told me, take the car with you, borrow it, drive it, just put gas and bring it back. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. Right, so I think that's a funny, that's a really interesting way of like how my 72-hour rule got me a car for a weekend for free, right? And it was a brand new car, and I was like, sure, if you're gonna I can bring it back Monday and there's no charge. Sure, I'll take it. And
nice, that's excellent. Good stuff. And so, for anyone who is interested in maybe connecting with you or wants to learn a little bit more about who you are and kind of maybe want to build that network with you, how would you recommend someone reaching out to you?
Yeah, so I have an email address. I'm on LinkedIn, I'm also on Facebook. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm more than happy to connect with anyone with questions or even develop new networks, right? I'm a big proponent of sharing knowledge. Things, you know, what's the good of knowing things if you don't share it with those that want to grow? So I'm an open resource. My email address, we can put it in the description box of the podcast, but it is my first name. So robert.deleon86@gmail.com.
All right. I appreciate you, brother. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for spending this time with us and sharing space. And I hope you all have a good day.
All right, now. Take care.
Hi again. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to another episode of the Live Long and Prosper podcast. As always, I hope that this podcast is adding a tremendous amount of value to you, your loved ones, and the community at large. Please, if you have not done so already, remember to subscribe to this podcast just to make sure you get all the latest notifications when we have a new episode. And if this is adding value to your life, as we hope it is, please share it with as many people as you think it will serve. Until the next time, everyone, live long and prosper.